Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Week in Review. I am functioning, sort of, on about 2 or 3 hours of sleep over the last 3 days. My little one, Maddie, the one-year-old, he's been sick, so this could be an interesting episode. A little bit sleep-deprived, but you never know. At any minute, things could just... Oh, wait a minute. We got a show to do. That's right. I forgot. Anyway, we've got a lot of Murdoch news to cover today. We've got some investigatory drama. Some drama related to the investigators' views of news coverage related to this story. But more importantly, we brought Jen Wood, our researcher, into the studio. Jen has been behind so many of the stories that you've been reading on our news outlet over the past few weeks and months, really diving into the weeds of this story and equipping us to bring you the very latest on the saga. We're also going to look at our video offerings. This week was an interesting week on video. We had some fun, crazy videos, including one about a North Charleston cop who, while on duty with his body camera on, tried to solicit a blowjob. SpaghettiOs. And then in addition to that, we've got, on a serious note, one of the more poignant, heart-wrenching clips that you're ever going to see on this news outlet or any other news outlet. And I'm talking about the story of a family whose lives were literally ripped apart by an unspeakable tragedy. We were able to see that up close and personal as they were willing to relive that so that they can make change, so that that won't happen to other families. That poignant story and much more coming your way on the Week in Review. Sometimes efforts to clear the air make things cloudier. And sometimes efforts to unmuddy the waters makes them, well, muddier. Look, I get it. I've been there. People have a natural inclination to defend themselves and their integrity and the integrity of their work product. But there's an old adage in this business. If you're explaining, you're losing. And I know this because I've done plenty of explaining in my time. But explanation was the name of the game, or attempted explanation was the name of the game. This week, when the South Carolina State Law Enforcement Division, SLED, issued a rare statement in connection with the still-unfolding Murdoch murders, crime, and corruption saga. So this statement was actually a joint statement issued by SLED and the Office of 14th Circuit Solicitor Duffy Stone. Now, our audience is very familiar with Duffy Stone. He's a guy who has been involved in the Murdoch murders investigation from the very beginning. And the question is why? That's the question. Why? And I'll tell you why we're asking that fundamental question. Because Duffy Stone has a long history with the Murdoch family, with the people at the very heart of this investigation. In fact, he followed 3 generations of Murdochs into office as solicitor. But not only that, he employed Alec Murdoch, who within 48 hours of the Mazell homicide that left 52-year-old Maggie Murdoch and 22-year-old Paul Murdoch dead, within 48 hours, as exclusively reported by my news outlet, Alec Murdoch was named as a person of interest in connection with that inquiry. And Alec Murdoch, at the time of the shootings, was an assistant solicitor in Duffy Stone's office. Now, I can understand the rationale behind Solicitor Stone saying, well, we didn't know he was a suspect. I think it's pretty clear that almost from the very beginning of this investigation, Alec Murdoch was not only a suspect, but the primary suspect. Now, I use the term person of interest, and I use that term because Mr. Murdoch's attorneys, most notably Dick Harpootlian, basically threatened to sue if we use the term suspect. So I did the right thing journalistically, and I referred to him as a person of interest. Now, whatever you want to call Alec Murdoch, whatever you want to call him, even if you want to say he's an innocent victim in all this, which again, at this point, I don't think anyone is going to say that, particularly now that we know that there is forensic evidence linking him to the crime scene, which, by the way, he told investigators he was nowhere near. Right? So let's discount that for a minute. But even if you assume he's an innocent victim, what in the world was Duffy Stone doing having officers, investigators under his authority investigating one of their own? Folks, we've been talking about this for weeks now as it relates to officer-involved shootings. And in fact, the South Carolina State Law Enforcement Division has been leading the fight to have all of these incidents investigated independently. SLED does these investigations. They do them better than anybody in the state. But when municipalities or counties take it upon themselves to investigate their own officers in regard to officer-involved shootings, that's not independent, folks. You can't investigate your own. And, well, you can, but you can't do it and expect the results of that probe to be taken seriously. But that's exactly what Duffy Stone was doing. And not only was he doing it, he did it for 2 months after Alec Murdoch was named a person of interest in connection with this investigation. So for 2 months, this guy and his investigators are on this case while their own, a member of their office is a person of interest. Again, that's wrong under any circumstances, but I want to rewind it even further because for the first 3 months of this investigation, Alec Murdoch was still carrying his badge as an assistant solicitor. He wasn't stripped of that badge until September 10, 3 months after these killings. Folks, that does not add up. It does not add up. You cannot have a member of an office being investigated by the office, potentially having access to the files from that investigation. Again, do we know when Alec Murdoch's access to the computer records of the 14th Circuit were taken away? No, we don't. Do we know how many times he logged into any of those records? Do we know what people talked about to him within the office during the investigation? No. But those are questions we should never have had to ask. We should never have to ask those questions because Duffy Stone and his investigators from the very beginning should have done the right thing and stepped back. Now, the statement that SLED issued today in relation to this investigation, I understand it. It's pretty easy to see what happened. Duffy Stone was upset at some of the coverage he was receiving. He was upset at the fact that he and his men were being questioned. He took it personally. He whined to Chief Mark Keel. Oh, I'm getting beat up by the media. You know, come rescue me. No, that's not what a real man does. A real man takes ownership. A real man takes ownership of their mistakes, of their errors. And again, I'm willing to take ownership as it relates to errors related to Duffy Stone. If his agents had no improper involvement in this investigation, fine. But that's the problem. They shouldn't have had any involvement. By definition, their involvement is improper. Definitionally improper. So I don't buy it when Duffy Stone or his allies, wherever they're coming from, I don't buy it when they tell me, oh, it's okay. You know, we were directing him. We were telling him what to do. We were telling his men what they should investigate, what they should do. No, they shouldn't have been there. In fact, as I wrote in my coverage of this announcement from SLED, Stone and his men shouldn't have been within a country mile of that crime scene, or for that matter, any criminal investigation involving Alec Murdoch and his family. Why? Because, again, you cannot investigate your own. Or if you do, don't expect anybody to take the results of that investigation seriously. All right, so next to probably Mandy Matney at the Murdoch Murders podcast, a lot of folks who have been following the crime and corruption saga that is Murdoch Murders probably think I'm one of the most informed voices of that story, of that saga. Well, that's actually not true. I'm actually knowledgeable only because I work with people who are far more knowledgeable than I am or ever will be on this subject. And I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to one of the people who is by far the most knowledgeable on this subject, and that's Jen Wood. Now, you're probably thinking, wait a minute, Jen Wood, who's Jen Wood? We know Mandy Matney, we know Will Foulkes, we know Liz Farrell, we know Dylan Nolan. Who's Jen Wood? Well, guess what, people? This is Jen Wood.
Hello.
Boom. You're even more mellifluous than I am. I'm gonna get jealous here in a minute. Now, Jen Wood is our researcher. And from the very beginning of this story, she has been equipping us with the good stuff, people. I mean, a level of insight into this case that we never would have had were it not for her connecting with us. And I just think it's amazing how we connected. Jen, do you want to tell them? Go for it.
I just messaged you and said, this case is fascinating. I'd love to do some research on it.
Do you regret that now?
No, never have.
Really? <Mm-mm. laughs> So, wait a minute. So you just DM'd me? You slid into my DMs? I mean, usually it's the other way around.
Is that right? A first for you?
I think so. Usually it's kind of going the other way, right? Is it Friday yet? Anyway, talk to me about your initial attraction. You said it fascinated you. Why? What did you read that keyed your mind?
I used to be a private investigator. And I have a tendency to, as soon as I see something interesting in the news, I just start digging into it to see mm-hmm. What isn't being reported. Mm-hmm. In this case, this probably within 10 minutes of starting to dig a little deeper, mm-hmm. I knew it was a much bigger story than people knew.
Right.
It's fascinating. And I've just never seen anything like it ever.
Yeah. And so you talked about seeing something deeper than just what we were looking at, which mm-hmm. was a crime scene and a bunch of investigations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we'd heard rumors about deeper connections, but I want to go back to last fall, which is when you and I really started collaborating mm-hmm. on content, and some of the research that you pulled related to Alec Murdoch's connections to a guy named Barrett T. Bowler.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this guy and how you started uncovering this web.
Well, I noticed he owned property records. I mean, mm-hmm. they are far more interesting than people give them credit for. And I noticed that Alec owned a bunch of properties with a Barrett Bulware, which I thought was a little bizarre, mm-hmm. Especially given the large number of them in Beaufort County. And when I looked at their location, it got a little more bizarre. So I decided to look into Barrett Bowler. And as soon as I started digging into his past and finding newspaper articles that linked him to drug smuggling and federal cases, I knew there was something there.
And not just linked, actually, he was indicted.
Indicted, charges dropped when the main witness got killed.
Correct. And is it safe to say that when you started digging into some of this stuff, I mean, were you a little nervous about what you were finding?
At first I wasn't, and then increasingly more so as I started digging into how the operation branched out and where it was branching out to.
The operation? You make them sound like a crime family.
I.e. allegedly.
maybe a little reticent to admit. I will admit, when I started looking at some of the research that she pulled, I was a little frightened. In fact, I joke sometimes with the folks here in the office that some of the guys in the office started asking me after those stories last fall about the drug connections, what's the blast radius on a cartel bomb? Yeah. We want to make sure we're not parking next to you.
You got to drive somebody in the car, and they're like, why don't you go out and get the car warmed up for me? Well, it's 80 degrees out, but okay.
So your family's making the same kind of jokes.
Yep.
It's funny, but it's also kind of not, right?
It's not funny, but
But hey, let's keep doing it.
Let's just keep digging and see what else we can find.
Who's the scariest cat in this whole story? Which one of these subjects, guy, girl, whoever, who in this story scares you the most?
Oh, I don't know if he scares me necessarily. Am I allowed to say names?
Drop names.
Greg Alexander.
Greg Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
This is for those of you, just last week we reported on Greg Alexander. He's the police chief of Yemisi, South Carolina, a town down in Beaufort County in the 14th Circuit, currently running for sheriff of Hampton County. He is a longtime ally of the Murdoch family. And in fact, he got a $5,000 check.
A loan.
A loan, right, from Alec Murdoch 1 month after the...
after the double homicide at Moselle.
What is it about Greg Alexander that gives you the heebie-jeebies?
He's the chief of police. He's running for sheriff of Hampton County currently. He has an obvious proven payment from Alex 1 month after the homicide.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of campaign contributions.
A lot of campaign contributions from members of the PMPED firm. And just some other things that I'm finding as I'm digging into him a little more.
Preview of coming attractions.
Just wait. he's concerning.
He's concerning. Mm-hmm. What's your take on Alex Murdaugh? A lot of folks look at this story as one lone nut. One lone nut did it all. It's like the Zapruder film, you know? Oh, it was just one dude. Your thoughts on that? Tell us your thoughts on Alex and on this theory that it's just one guy doing all this.
You did a very good analogy of it for me the other day. I mean, it's either one guy or it's a giant web of corruption. And the longer you dig into it and the more information that's released in court hearings, the more it really is trending towards it is a lot of corruption, mm-hmm. widespread and for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It's just the way they've been doing business down there.
I just think that was how they've operated for years. I mean, I think anthropological studies could be done on generational wealth and power in that area. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So you think this is one of those sagas?
I would be surprised if by the end of this, there's a case that's comparable.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be my next. Where does this end?
I don't see an end point yet. Do you?
Hey, I'm relying on you to tell me.
if I ever see one, I will let you know.
Please do. It's obviously it's going to end up in courtrooms, federal, mm-hmm. state. It's already in civil court.
Yeah.
It's already in criminal court as it relates to the initial financial charges against Alex Murdaugh. Clearly, there'll be a murder trial at some point.
One would hope. I mean, it can't remain an unsolved crime, mm-hmm. right? And how many murder trials are we looking at?
Right. And then one of the things, Liz Farrell was on here a few weeks ago and completely reoriented my thinking on this when she reminded me this is not a true crime saga. Mm-mm. This is a crime and corruption saga.
Exactly.
And so you've been looking into some of these judges, into some of these institutions, propping this family up. Tell us just a little bit about what you found there.
The judges are concerning. I mean, Carmen Mullen alone, her rulings and practices have been questionable for a very long time. I'm anxiously awaiting to see what the Office of Disciplinary Review mm-hmm. does with the complaints that have been filed against her. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's other judges involved. There has to be. Mm-hmm. For the court system and the criminal justice system to work in their favor for that long, there has to be more judges involved. And police officers and police chiefs.
And prosecutors, perhaps?
Perhaps.
That's a sticky subject this week, isn't it?
A little bit.
We won't go there.
We're going to stay away from that.
Except I already went there.
Yeah, you did. You always do.
I kind of do. I blame Eugene Wood for equipping me with all these incredible facts.
I'm just empowering you.
Yeah, enabling.
Yes.
Something like mm-hmm. that. Jen, I want to thank you for coming on because, again, you're somebody that has made a lot of what we do possible just by the way that you're tenacious, you're methodical. We wouldn't be able to do what we're doing without you. And I just am not only grateful for that, but also your willingness to come on and share a little bit about yourself with our readers. But by the way, we completely skipped over that. Can you, before we go, you're from Louisiana. You live in Louisiana. You're from
Michigan originally. Ann Arbor area. Went to Michigan State. My degree is in criminal justice. I have background in insurance liability and private investigation. A little bit of everything, but those are the two that I probably have the most experience in.
And did some work higher education?
I have worked in higher education.
You like Michigan State?
I mean,
Sparty, really.
I enjoyed my time there.
Fair enough. Jen Wood, thank you. Will you come on again soon? And
absolutely.
Awesome, because we need to know where this thing's going. I know. You're the only one that can tell us.
I don't know about that.
Well, I do. Jen Wood, everybody, look for more of her on this show and look for more of her amazing work in the reporting that we're doing on Fitz News.
So it's been a little over 4 months since we started shooting video at Fitz News, and this was something I was a little reticent, a little hesitant, wasn't sure about doing. But over the last 4 months, I think we've gotten pretty good at it. And we had another opportunity this week to kind of spread our wings with the video offerings we've been doing. And it was a story that comes out of North Charleston, South Carolina, one that I'm kind of already giggling as I talk about it, because it involved a police officer on duty who just wanted a blowjob. But I can relate, right? Dudes out there, you've been married over a decade. We can relate, right? Anyway, this guy, bless his heart, wanted a blowjob in the worst possible way. So he basically accosts for about 7 minutes, at least this is the 7 minutes captured on tape, this poor girl working at a Dillard's in North Charleston at the Northside Mall, constantly trying to convince her to go with him into the stocking room and give him a blowjob. Now she demurs. She repeatedly says, I'm not so sure about this. I've got customers. My bosses might come in. Other people might walk in. And he repeatedly tells her, you got to be quick about it. We got to be quick about it. Got to be quick. Got to be quick. In fact, he even tells her, do your thing. Lickety split. I don't know, man. We got banana footage somewhere. There's the banana footage. My God. Dylan, our director of special projects, Dylan Nolan. He did that banana thing to me earlier this week. And I liked it. No. We'll cut that out. Right. Anyway, here's a funny glimpse at that clip from Northside Mall with the North Charleston cop that desperately wanted a blowjob.
I have more to lose, I feel like, than you do.
Like
part-time job, family. I have a body cam on, a uniform.
You have your body cam on?
No, it's not on, but it's on.
Oh, I was about to say,
I'd have to put it up somewhere to make sure it doesn't turn on accidentally.
It can turn on?
Well, if you bump it the wrong way.
Oh.
You have to pull this button this way. And I've turned it on an accident before.
That would be awkward.
All right, so we reached out to the South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy after that story aired for an update on Officer Felkel's status. We will find out in April whether or not he is allowed to get another job at another law enforcement agency as they decide about his certification and his qualifications to get another law enforcement position. Will he be successful? Will he be able to maintain his certification? We'll find out next month. But my advice to Officer Felkel, if you do get another job, save the attempted blowjobs for your own time, not taxpayer time. So obviously, we like to have fun around here with our videos, and there's a place and time for that. There's also a time and place to be serious, to talk about issues that are life and death, and to turn over the cameras, turn over the mics, turn over our platform to people who have a story to tell. And we did that this week in a way that was just jarring. I think that's the only word I could use for it. It was painful, heart-wrenching, kind of gut-wrenching, a story that I first became aware of a few years ago, and a family I actually interviewed a year ago, but due to some court issues, we weren't able to get them on camera until this month, this week. And I'm talking about the Kaiser family. They're from the Midlands area of South Carolina. They live on Lake Murray. And almost 3 years ago, they endured just an unspeakable tragedy. They were on their way home on a pontoon boat when a cigarette boat driven by an individual who was allegedly under the influence of alcohol literally slammed over them. Stanley Kaiser, the father of the family, was killed. Sean Kaiser, his wife, lost a leg, nearly lost both legs. And the daughter, Morgan Kaiser, who was on the boat, literally had to choose which one of her parents to save. in the aftermath of this just horrific crash. We sat down with the Kaisers, with Sean and Morgan, and here's an excerpt from that just incredibly emotional interview.
We're almost home. You could basically see our house, so close, less than a minute's drive, and all of a sudden, just sounded like metal, like you were in like a car being crushed, a metal car being crushed. And they didn't know if you were gonna survive or not. Just, it felt like an eternity underneath that metal, that loud metal. And when I stood up, I just figured my father would be really upset because his brand new boat had been ruined. And I called out and I said, is everyone okay? And my mom said, yes, she's fine. And I looked over at my father and the guilt that comes along with not being able to save him is a lot to deal with.
So that's the kind of pain, the kind of tragedy that I can't even conceptualize, let alone live through or relive, which is what Morgan Kaiser did in that clip. She literally relived what happened to her that night in the water, and just unbelievable. And the fact that she was willing to do that. Let me tell you why she's willing to do that. Because it matters. She and her family are pushing for expanded boater safety legislation currently before the General Assembly. If you want to learn more about that, I would encourage you to visit their website, Safe the Lake, and that's safethelake.com, Safe the Lake, where you can learn about the life of Stan Kaiser, Morgan's father, and you can learn more about the boater safety legislation that she and her family are pushing in the South Carolina General Assembly. But I just want to thank Morgan. I want to thank her mom, Sean, for taking the time to come in here and film that incredibly emotional interview. All right, so that's it for the weekend review. Amazingly, I did not pass out during this episode. As I mentioned at the outset, I haven't gotten a lot of sleep this week. Like I said, a little Maddie's been sick. I haven't slept. Biscuits, mama. Thank you, mama.